Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio audience, God bless you. Just in case y'all just tuned in, let me tell you what we did. This is our first night, our introductory course. So, you know, when you go to college, you go to class, and you don't take a test the first day usually. The instructors will tell you in each class, be it chemistry, sociology, history, anatomy, physiology, they'll tell you what they're going to do. They'll give you a syllabus, and they'll say, this week we're going to do week one, week two, week three. They'll give you an outline of what you're supposed to expect. I tried to cover that tonight on the first hour, but our guest, Michael Tubbs, is so friggin' interesting. His resume is 10 times more broad and complex than I thought it was. But next week, he's going to have a lot of information. And people, I want to tell you what he told me. Next week, all the people listening, please have pads, papers, and pens and pencils. And you might want to record some information because, look, next week, it's not going to be like tonight. It's tonight was heavy and froth, light and frothy to get your attention and tell you some interesting stories, but to let you know what's coming. This was our syllabus, our introductory course. Next week, he's going to get into some very heavy stuff that you may well need to, your life may depend on it. It may well depend on it. But we're transitioning to the second hour. We're still waiting on Gene, the Bitter Ender, Andrews. We don't know where he is. He may have been captured by the Yankees because they're really upset with him because he's been wearing out swords on these Yankees every week. He just cannot get a sword to stand up, so he has to keep having them made. But anyway, we also have Miss Valerie Protopapazone. She's going to give you a course tonight on Colonel John Singleton Mosby, the Gray Ghost. Until Gene gets on, Miss Valerie, I'll just get you to introduce yourself to the audience out here. How are you doing, Miss Valerie?
Well, I'm coming along the way things are going these days. You get up in the morning and wonder if the sun is going to rise in the east or if it's all over. I'm not terribly sure. I'm here in New York, so anything is possible.
What? Yes, I'll be up there, God willing. 3 weeks from tomorrow, I'll be running the New York Marathon. That'll be my fifth time. Yep, I was 67.
I haven't got enough energy to run marathons. That's fine if you're a Greek, but I'm not. So
I was probably a Greek in my former life. Hey, I was going to do it during the break, but you know how I always do everything by the seat of my pants. We have a fellow here. Before you get into your course, it won't take but a minute. I want him. He read about you. He said he's always seen your name all over the internet. He's a very distinguished gentleman, a very impressive fellow, giant of a man, former Green Beret prisoner, survivor of the federal gulag. He would like to say hello to you, Miss Valerie. His name is Michael Tubbs.
Hello, Miss Valerie. You and I might have been friends on Facebook a long time ago, but you know, I've seen your name all over the internet with some very interesting posts in the past. So it's nice to actually get to hear your voice and speak to you in person.
Well,
through the phone.
Thank you very much. I can't say as I have a huge following, except for the ones with the pitchforks and the torches. That's a following in a way, I suppose. I remember my mother telling me that you're as much well-known by your enemies as your friends.
Absolutely. And I hear you're going to be talking about one of my childhood heroes, Colonel Mosby.
A most amazing man.
Absolutely.
The more I learned about him, especially after the war, the more I realized that he was one of those unique souls that come along every once in a while.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to your presentation on him.
Well, I believed when I first started, I fell in love with him when I was 9. I'm 81,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm faithful, damn it. I'm nothing if not faithful, you know?
Yeah.
Well, what can I tell you from somebody from New York?
Well, you're the same age as my co-host, Nancy Hitt. Well, you know...
Yeah, but she's better looking.
Well, I don't know. It's up to debate. That's I'm not going to fall for that trap, man. I'm not falling for that. But no, sir, we. But anyway, Miss Valerie, we'll try to call Gene again during the break. I don't know what's happened to him.
I hope he's all right. I mean, the way things are today, people sort of disappear.
Yes, they do. Yes, they most certainly do.
Yeah.
But anyway, before we get to you, I was going to let the people know part of our course. This is part of the course, people, our white civil defense course. Part of our course is going to be history. We're going to have we have a history. So, like we said, when you go to college, you take history, mathematics, sociology, chemistry, all this kind of stuff. We're going to have history, historical figures, people from our race that were great, that were just just superheroes. As part of educating our people, giving you heroes to look up to. You know, when you hear, whites are low down and evil and wicked and never did anything, we have some of the greatest people in the history of the world. White people, as far as I'm concerned, invented everything of really value. And we have people who defended our race. But Miss Valerie, she's part of the heart of this historical class. And she's going to start tonight with, you just heard, Colonel John Singleton Mosby, but I'll let her tell you. Get us started on Colonel John Singleton Mosby, the Gray Ghost, Miss Valerie, if you will.
I would love to do that, but before I do that, you speaking of whites and the white race, look in your history and you will find no race but the whites who cared about the problems that other races had. Nobody went to Africa as did the good doctor who went there to help the African people. No, there's no ships that go down into the third world countries to bring them operations like Operation Smile. There's no Salvation Army. There's no Red Cross. That was all white. It was not Chinese. It was not Japanese. It was not Indian. It was not black. It was white. And they tell you that the whites were the worst people going. Well, let me tell you, if it hadn't been for the whites, there might not be too many blacks or browns left in the world. So if you think about that when they start telling you how terrible your race is, I would look now to, as far as John Singleton Mosby goes, he's a most unusual man. And I was asked to speak on him about his guerrilla tactics, his fighting, that, you know, what about the guerrilla warfare and the Civil War? That was what this was about. And John Mosby was perhaps even today, the best guerrilla fighter that there was. And there was a reason for that. It wasn't only his intelligence, but it was his understanding of humanity and his understanding of what had to be done. He was not afraid to discard things that he thought were useless, such as the saber. Mosby was the first man for the cavalry to get rid of the saber. Everybody else loved it, and they rode with it, and he thought it was useless. Not only that, it made too much noise because he worked in secrecy, and he couldn't afford the clanking and the crashing. So he had pistols. That's what he went with. But as far as Mosby himself went, he was an unusual man. He was very small. He was very sickly when he was a child. His doctors told his mother that he wasn't going to survive to adult. You know, he was just not going to survive. He had breathing problems. And, of course, when he went to school, because he was little, he was picked on by bullies. And he always responded back. He didn't disappear. But he said he lost every fight that he ever was in, with the exception of one where he almost won until the adults stopped the fight. And he never forgot that the almost time he almost won. But when he was a unionist, he voted for Douglas in the 1860 election. He was against secession. He was against slavery, though he was a slave owner. He thought it was a terrible thing. He thought it destroyed the South. He thought it destroyed the morals of the people. He was entirely, he would fight for the Yankees. He would have fought for them had Virginia remained in the Union. But when Virginia went out, he considered Virginia his mother, and he went out with it. Now, he had joined a cavalry group. He was not interested in it, but he joined it because a friend asked him to. And his first commander was a man by the name of William Grumble Jones, who was a very, very clever and excellent officer. But he had a very bad temper, not for his men. He was very good to his men. But he had very little respect for the men over him, which doesn't get you very far in the military. In any event, he went into this, was called the Washington Mounted Rifles. And he went into Richmond, and he was all, he was not designed for the military. He really wasn't. He didn't like being in camp. He said he felt like he was living, he had lost everything because there was no mental, he was a reader, he was loved poetry. He had one great gift that nobody ever talks about, but that I think was very much part of his success. I believe he was one of those few people that you hear about with a photographic memory. That is, everything he read, he remembered. Because he could recite things, he could recite all of the great Greek and Roman philosophers, the whole bloody thing, word for word, poetry. So when you can do that, when you can read something and remember it like that, you have a big advantage. In any event, as he was in Richmond, he found that he liked being on the outpost. That is, he didn't like camp. He liked being out with the men who were on post.
Miss Val, hold on to that thought. We're going to our first, this is our first break of the second hour. People, hold on. We're getting in this history course we've told you about, this part of the White Civil Defense course that we're giving. Be right back, folks.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
The 2020 elections were one of the most corrupt in history. See the proof for yourself.
We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops.
2,000 mules, a shocking new movie from Dinesh D'Souza.
One mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes.
2,000 mules. Join the special virtual premiere and Q&A on May 7th. Get your tickets now. Available only at 2000mules.com. 2000mules.com. Sponsored by Salem Media Group.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we had pulled a switch, man. We pulled, got a guy, I wouldn't say off the bench. We couldn't get in touch with Gene Andrews. People keep Gene in your the bitter ender, keeping him in your prayers. We can't hear from him. But you know what? We've got the one and only Michael Tubbs. He's hanging on. He's going to set in if we need him. We're going to he's going to come in and be the second team quarterback or whatever. Or but this is Texas A&M. We brought him out of the stands. Like, what do they call it? The 11th man? But anyway,
well, I'm usually, as soon as they have an opening, they let me go and get somebody else.
Yeah, get lost.
I will never die of pride. My mother used to say, what have you got to be proud about? You know?
Oh, Lord.
She said I was perfect for humility. It worked.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, that's rough. Well, yeah, anyway.
Well,
Anyway, if you will, continue on. And we were talking back during the break. You told us about how John Singleton Mosley was a little guy, sickly, lost every fight he was ever in. You know, and he didn't like swords, et cetera, et cetera. Continue on there. Maybe some more bio if you want to, because you got plenty of time. And tell us about some of these guerrilla tactics that he used.
Let me know when to start.
Start right now.
Okay, yes. Y'all just excuse me. I'm not so good at radio. In fact, I'm not so good at this at all. But in any event,
right.
Mosby wanted to learn. He was one of those men that he didn't want to ever do anything in ignorance. So when he went into the military, he would sit with Grumble Jones for hours and speak with him about tactics. He had his wife send him books about, you know, from Napoleon. And he wanted to know all. That's how he worked. He was not happy with ignorance. He needed knowledge. And he got an idea. It was not his idea. It was as old as warfare, that he would prefer, rather than being in the regular military situation, he would prefer to be behind the lines, making life miserable for the enemy. He knew that he could make a big difference. And he attempted to get General Stuart, who became a great friend of his, to give him, you know, a couple of men to go off and try this. Stuart sent him instead to Jackson, and he was captured at the Beaver Dam Station by a group of Yankees that came up and captured him. And he was sent to the old Capitol prison, and he was then exchanged. Now, this is the kind of man he was. As he was coming on the ship to go to the place of exchange, he noticed, nobody else was looking, including all these officers, that there was troop movement going on in the area. And he had the captain of the boat that was taking him to this place to find out what was happening. And he found out that Burnside's men were being moved, not to where they expected them to go, but to Hooker. And he then, when he got off the ship, went to Robert E. Lee and told him what was going on. And Lee sent a message to Jackson, and that was the first battle of Cedar Mountain that they won, because Mosby had told them of the movement of these troops, where to expect the next attack. Now, that was how he worked. And finally, at Christmas, when the raid that Stuart had into Yankee territory at Christmas in 1862, he asked if he could take a couple of men and go see if he could do any good behind the lines. And Stuart gave him 15 men, or 11. I'm not too sure. 15 or so. And off he went. And that was the beginning of his, eventually became the 43rd Battalion. And within a very short period of time, he made quite a name for himself. In fact, they used to call him, you know, the notorious captain. He wasn't a captain. He had lost his officership when Jones was voted out of office. But the first thing he did when he got enough men is he went into Fairfax Courthouse and returned with the commanding general of the Union forces, Edward Stoughton. And nobody believed it. The North didn't believe it. The South didn't believe it. With 23 men, he went into the middle of the Federal Army without a shot being fired, took over 100 horses, prisoners, including a general, and they just they were absolutely astounded. Nothing like that had ever happened. And that was, of course, the beginning of his career. But what made him work is that he won. He always was the person responsible. He, in fact, when they stopped the Confederate Ranger law, they stopped it because there were too many people who were doing too many things that weren't military, if you know what I mean. His reports went to Secretary of War Seddon, and Seddon so loved the way he wrote. He said he never praised himself. He always blamed himself when things didn't go right. He always had absolute praise for his men. And so Seddon kept him, as he kept McNeil as well. But you can tell the difference between Mosby's men and even McNeil. McNeil was a great guerrilla fighter. He worked in West Virginia mostly. But McNeil was killed by one of his own men who shot him in the back. Now, Mosby's men, they would have died for the man. To a man, they would have died for him. And in fact, there's a motto that John Munson wrote, that this was their motto: anywhere with Mosby, gladly, joyously, in darkness, in light, in safety, or in peril, with no good reason or bad or no reason at all. Anywhere with Mosby. And he worked, he would get on a horse and go out for 2 days scouting and then come back and lead an operation after being 2 days in the saddle. He had tremendous stamina. Somebody, I think it was Jones who said, Virgil Carrington Jones, that any one of his men could have broken him physically. He was little. But he could run rings around all of them. He had more stamina. He could go for hours, and this went right until almost the day he died. He had that kind of physical stamina. And his idea was for his men. In fact, John Munson told a story about one of his young men. His name was John Perrier, and he was handsome, as according to Munson, handsome, reckless, daring, frantic for a fight all the time. He had no admiration for cautious people, no sense of fear in his competition, and not the slightest judgment in a crisis. All he knew about was war, and he gathered, he would run into things. And in one particularly amazing thing, Mosby said to him, Perrier, I'm going to make you a lieutenant for gallantry. But, said the colonel, I don't want you ever to command any of my men. He was mostly concerned with giving his men the best chance to survive. And he did very well with that. He really did. He didn't lose a great many men. Of course, he lost men. It's a war. You know, if he could have fought without losing anybody, he would have been happy to do it. He was wounded about five times. In fact, General Lee said that the only fault he had to find with the man was that he kept getting wounded. But he was an amazing man. He blamed himself, for instance, when something went wrong, for instance, the Miskell Farm thing, where he blamed himself that he didn't set up sentries on the roadway because they were exhausted, and he didn't think that the Yankees knew where he was, but they did. They found out. But he led a mounted charge into a much superior force of Union cavalry, albeit in a very small contained area, on foot. He went through the gate with his pistols out on foot, and they were facing him on horseback. And one of his men gave him his horse, and then when another Yankee died, he took his horse. They absolutely destroyed a force that they were 63 men, and the force was 200 against them was 250, and they destroyed them. They destroyed them, and they were caught. They weren't prepared. But he had that kind of. His men knew that everything he did was for them. That he would never lead them into or run from them or put them where they shouldn't belong, because that was his whole tactic was to do what the enemy did not expect. He said he never stood for a charge. He turned around and charged groups that were many times his size, and they ran away. And he said his men got to believe that, you know, success was attendant to his flag. And he said, once they believe that, they'll follow you anywhere. And they did. And they were so angry with him, they hated him so much, that they ordered him hanged without trial. And they said that he murdered people, and he raped women, and he did this, and he did that. And after the war, some of his greatest friends were the men he had captured during the war. So he was a very, very unusual man. Honesty was everything. In fact,
Ms. Valerie, it sounds like you heard the music. We're taking our second break of the second hour.
No problem.
Be right back.
I just wish you'd beep before you do it so I don't talk into it.
Don't you worry.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marissa reporting. Prosecutors in Raleigh signaled that adult charges are expected against the 15-year-old boy suspected in Thursday's shooting that killed five people and injured two others. Wake County District Attorney Lauren Freeman on Friday stated her office's intent to move the case from district court, which covers juvenile matters, to superior court. In this situation, there's no question that the mass loss of life, in my opinion, this case be transferred and tried in superior court, Freeman told the Raleigh News and Observer. Freeman's office did not respond to a request for further details. Police in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, just south of Tulsa, recovered four bodies from a river less than a week after four men were reported missing. It's new territory for Police Chief Joe Prentice.
This is the first time that I remember ever having four adult men go missing.
Prentice says the men, ranging in age from 29 to 32, were on bicycles and visiting local scrapyards when they disappeared, their cell phones going dead. Identification of the bodies are pending confirmation from the Tulsa Medical Examiner. This year's flu numbers are up considerably.
Reports of flu and other respiratory illnesses are higher than what would normally be seen in the United States at this time of year. This is according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Typically, flu season ramps up in December and usually peaks in February. It is anticipated that the agency will say the flu and similar viral illnesses are notably high in Arkansas, California, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas. For the USA Radio News Los Angeles Bureau, I'm Ellie Andrews.
Neighborhoods powered by solar panels with backup batteries weathered the direct onslaught of Hurricane Ian in Florida, utilities and developers said, keeping the lights on throughout the storm while millions of others lost power. This is USA Radio News.
You know, a lot of times you have to choose between something high quality or something that saves you money. But if you can get both, why not? Especially when it comes to health care. And that's MediShare. You get both. The typical family saves $500 a month switching to MediShare. And that's huge. But it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. It's because MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge PPO network, so... yeah, really, you could save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. If you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. Here is the number you need. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we're right. We're knee-deep into our starting our historical section. We're going to have several other historical figures on, other than just Colonel John Singleton Mosby. But it sounds like Colonel John Singleton Mosby had some traits that were like that Nathan Bedford Forrest had, you know, for instance, never stand and accept the charge. By the way, people, you need to know, Miss Valerie has published a book. I believe it's over 700 pages on John Singleton Mosby. Miss Valerie, tell us a little bit about that book that you wrote, and how can people get it?
Well, the book is available through a Southern publisher, Shotwell. It's called, they've changed the title. Originally, it was one of these self-publishing things, and I managed to get them to take the book. And it's called John Singleton, Colonel John Singleton Mosby in the News, 1862 to 1916, the year of his death. Because most of what I learned, not so much about what he did in the war, but what happened after the war, in which he has suffered terribly from the stories that were told about him by people who despised him for one reason or another. The newspapers, even the ones that got it wrong, got it right, if you know what I mean, because you knew that they were wrong when they wrote what they wrote. But it will show you that all the things they said about the man just went simply not true. So if you believed what they said, you know, he went to become a Republican. He was a Henry Clay Whig. His whole family were Henry Clay Whigs. He had more in common with Abraham Lincoln politically than he did with Jefferson Davis. They were all Henry Clay Whigs. That's what the Republican Party came from. So it was not, you know, it was nothing that he did that was unusual. He went with the conservatives after the war, which was the sort of Democratic Party without the name Democratic Party in Virginia, because he couldn't back the Republicans in the state because it was carpetbaggers and, you know, the whole nine yards. But he wanted the conservatives of Virginia to work with the federal government because, and here John Singleton Mosby was absolutely wrong. He believed that the white people of the North, who were Republicans, would want to work with the white people of the South. No, he was wrong. They hated the white people, many of them, not all of them, obviously. They were very happy to put the white man under the black in the South. They despised the blacks. The whites didn't in the South, but they did in the North. They used to dig up the bodies of black men who'd been buried in white cemeteries. You don't ever hear that happening in the South.
No.
So in any event, that as far as Mosby went, he believed that as a guerrilla he could do his the best, and he was in the middle of the biggest army that the federal government had, and they couldn't touch him. Oh, they got a couple, you know, obviously. He lost men and they were captured, but they couldn't catch him for love nor money, and God knows they tried. God knows they tried.
I bet they did. They probably had. If Miss Fowler, you will tell the audience one more time the best way they can get your book, and tell us a little bit about the book. I think it's 700 pages.
Oh yes, it's a very large book. It's available through Amazon, but it's also available through Shotwell themselves, I believe. It's also available through the Barnes Review, which is a wonderful historical magazine. Very good. But you can get it on Amazon. It's a big book, and I didn't intend to write a book. It's just that I kept transcribing newspaper articles as I got them, and then in 2012 or 2013, the Library of Congress opened their newspapers to the internet. And that was, hence no more vacuuming and no more dusting and no more cooking and no more, you know, we just went immediately to that and grabbed and grabbed and grabbed and grabbed and transcribed and transcribed and transcribed. And finally, after the death of my husband and, I was looking for something to live for, I said, you know, this proves all the terrible things they've ever said about this man, like that he was, what did Jones say, that he was senile. This is a man who wrote a book that's used in West Point when he was senile. You know, and he died at 82. So, you know, I mean, if he was senile, then three-quarters of the people today are retarded. They're not senile. They're just dead mentally. He was never lost his abilities mentally. So, I wrote that book more for his post-war than for what he did in the war, because at least Mr. Jones was kind enough to give him credit for what he did in the war. That's something, anyway. But Pat Jones is not my favorite person, because he was hostile. You know, he wanted him to be lost cause and all that, and after the war. But
why did they disparage him so? And if you will, when you say that, give us some of to your knowledge, some of his more famous or tactics, battlefield tactics, guerrilla tactics.
His idea was that you made the enemy, as he said himself, he believed that the hatred that the North, the soldiers felt for him, was more on account of the sleep he made them lose than the casualties. Because if you read, you want to read something that gives you the, if not the tactics, at least the emotional thing that Mosby had, read her, Melville, Moby Dick's Melville, about the poem about Mosby. And they say, and in the green dark glides Mosby like the shark. He scared them to death with his, I don't think he ever had any more at one time than 600 men, and the biggest thing he ever used was 300 men for the wagon train raid that he did in that he hit the back of Sheridan's wagon train. And he caused such damage that Sheridan had to go all the way back to where he started.
Wow.
Yes.
Can you go into details on that? Do you have any details on that raid, or you may not?
No. Well, the funny thing, if there is something funny about this raid, he went with 300 men. That was the most he ever went anywhere with. And they were looking for the wagon train. Now, this was a huge wagon train. I mean, immense. And it was, of course, like any immense wagon train. It was stretched out and stretched out and stretched out. And at the end of the wagon train, they had 100 days men guarding it. There were very few regular soldiers. So they actually rode into the wagon train at night. Nobody could see the color of their uniforms. It was night.
Oh.
And they talked to people, and people talked to them. And in fact, one of the officers asked some of Mosby's men to guard the rear of the train against Mosby.
That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible.
So anyway, they had guts. He had two little mountain howitzers, and he figured the idea was they stopped at the night, and it was in Berryville. And there was a rise, and it was misty. You know, the morning was coming, so he wanted them to put the two little cannons, and then these men were scattered all around, and when they heard the cannons go off, they would attack. Okay, fine. So he's sitting there on his horse, and they put down the cannons. And one of them was broken. They put the remaining cannon down, and they put it on a hornet's nest. Suddenly he's looking around, and all of his men are running like hell from the cannon. What are you doing? We have to fire the thing. And he says, suddenly, he said, the hornets found him. And he says, suddenly the whole world was yellow jackets. The whole world. And there's a drawing of him holding onto his horse who was rearing him. So one of his men ran, waving his hat, pulled the cannon off the hornet's nest, and he said they went back into the ground, and they fired the shot. It beheaded a mule, and that was when everybody attacked. And he lost three men, including a young man that had just joined him by the name of Louis Aldi. And somebody came and told him of Aldi's death, and he said, I can't help it. That was his response. I can't help it. And they took, God knows what they took. They took 500 beef cattle, took horses, oh, my God. And then they had musical instruments. Somebody was trying to play the violin, and they almost drowned him in the river. You have to understand that Mosby's men, they were not like regular soldiers. To them, they were having a good time. I mean, they went into battle and they fought, but after the whole thing, they would laugh. It was not the kind of thing that you have with the regular. It was like Robin Hood's men, if you want to know what it was like. That's exactly what it was like.
Well, Miss Valerie, we've got to go to our last commercial break. This is our last segment. People, hold on to your hat. We're having this very, very interesting story about John Singleton Mosby. Be right back.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, this is our last segment. This is 2 hours. They always fly by so fast. And, you know, as fate would have it, as the good Lord have it, you know, Gene Andrews didn't call in. I hope everything's okay with him. This is the first time he's ever been in No Call No Show. So I'm afraid something happened. But anyway, as fortune would have it, we have Mike Tubbs with us tonight. He loves Miss Valerie. He loves her stories. And he has a comment to make or two about some of the knowledge that Miss Valerie has been imbibing us with tonight and some of the knowledge she's been handing out to us tonight. So go ahead, Mike. Make your comments or your questions, son.
Yes, sir. I was just reminded, as Miss Valerie was thrilling us with the exploits of Mosby, that some of our greatest warrior heroes of the South, you know, both Mosby, Nathan Bedford Forrest, and during the American Revolution, Francis Marion, some of these guerrilla fighters, unconventional fighters, none of them had formal military training. You know, Mosby was an attorney. I can't remember what Francis Marion had done before the war, but he wasn't a military officer, and Forrest as well. It should hearten our people as we go through the rest of this course and in future broadcasts to remind our people that you don't necessarily need formal military training, even though it is helpful to produce good results against the enemy.
You know, I think Francis Marion. Swamp Fox, he's also that's one of Sam Bushman's heroes. Sam Bushman owns the Liberty News Radio, and he syndicates our show, Blood River Radio. He told me some things about Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox. I wish I could remember him. For instance, he was, I think, a real small stature, maybe had some handicaps, but the guy was just gifted by God with some incredible, almost supernatural talents. But you're so right, General Nathan Bedford Forrest. I knew quite a bit about him because we've had Gene. Now, that's one of Gene Andrews, the Bitter Enders, his expertise of the war, you know, Lincoln's war against the South. But he kind of specializes in Nathan Bedford Forrest. Matter of fact, he may have gotten trapped up at what we call the Forrest Home up there. Let's see, I can never think of the name of that place up there in Tennessee where they have the Forrest Home. I'll think about it in a minute. But anyway, he wears many hats, so he may have not been able to get away from there. He's a guide. He works up there. He cuts brush, burns brush, leads the tourists that come up there. So anyway, we go right back to Miss Valerie. Miss Valerie, you have a lot of fans here in you know, as fate would have it, you have one of them on the show with you tonight, or another one on the show with Michael Tubbs.
Anyway, well, I think one of the things that very few people recognize or realize is that as John Mosby said later on in his life, he had as much fire in his rear as in his front. A lot of people didn't like him in the Confederate military.
Oh.
Yes, a lot of people. Now, he was very fond of Jeb Stuart. In fact, he defended Jeb Stuart from the charge that it was Stuart's wrong actions led to Gettysburg. He wrote and proved that that was not the case. But, and that didn't make him very popular either, because they decided that when he did that, he was against Robert E. Lee, which is nonsense. He was never against General Lee. He was against Heffen Hill, who brought the battle to Gettysburg where it was not supposed to happen. Somebody said, Stuart should have been at Gettysburg. And he said, Lee wasn't at Gettysburg. He wasn't there till he heard the firing. He was more surprised than anybody else there was a battle going on in Gettysburg. But in any event, he had a lot of people in his own side that would have been very happy to turn him over to the Yankees, or if the Yankees had taken him out. They didn't like. Later on, somebody said to him, you know, General so-and-so said that your men, they lived the life of Riley. They didn't suffer. They lived in, they slept in beds and so forth and so on. And what do you think of that? And Mosby said, look, you know, if you judge a military commander, you have two judgments to make, how he treated his men and how he dealt with the enemy. And he said, from what I look at what the enemy writes about me, the enemy, I did very well taking care of the enemy. I won from the enemy. And he said, if what you're saying is true, I treated my men very well. He says, you should be looking at me as a great military commander.
Yes.
You could not trip that man up, but he had nothing but people in his rear doing more things against him than he had at the other side. So he was never, you would say, he was hardly having help from his own side. He didn't. But yet, when Robert E. Lee's papers were gone through, Lee was a man who didn't give kudos. He believed that duty was its own reward. That was Robert Edward Lee. But the man that he had the most things to say for and about was John Singleton Mosby. And that's, you know, Mosby was rather thrilled to hear that, because he was very fond of Lee, and Lee was very fond of him.
So, you know, kind of as an aside, not to cut you up, kind of as an aside, I had to, I was chosen to speak at a funeral yesterday. I'll let our people know one more time, Lee Cochran passed away. We buried him yesterday, and the family picked me out of the blue to give the part of the eulogy. And I opened, I said, duty, honor, country, the motto of West Point. And I felt that Lee Cochran embodied duty, honor, and country in his own way. But anyway, I know that everything, every co-host we have on, every guest we have on, like you, like Mike, here I go down one of my infamous rabbit trails. Almost everything you say reminds me of something else that somebody else said. But anyway, I'll shut up and go right back to you, Miss Valerie. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I just wrote an article that I sent. I don't know who I sent it to. And it said, please remove my name. That was the title of it. And these people that are, you know, they're going to remove the names of Bragg and Hood and this, that, and the other. I said, have you looked at our government and our military lately? I said, would any of these men want their names on it? Every one of them. Jackson, Longstreet, and especially Lee, who was asked to lead, they chose to fight for the South rather than lead the Federal Army. Would they wish to stay now that the Federal Army is woke? I don't think so. I wouldn't want my name on anything. I mean, people think, oh, it's an insult. Is it?
That's a damn good point. That's an excellent point.
You know, I mean, and now when our military, and I don't blame our military, I mean, really I don't, when our military returns to what it used to be, yes, then by all means, I'm sure Lee would like his name back. But they're taking the names off colleges. I'd take my name off a college, too, considering what our academia has become. It's an enemy of Christianity, of decency, of humanity. I wouldn't want my name on it. although maybe they deserve my name, I don't know. But the point is that John Singleton Mosby was a most unique man. He had a way of fighting, he knew how to do it, and he was totally and completely honest. And that's why when he worked three times for the government, first in Hong Kong, after he lost everything trying to reconcile the country. He wanted all things, the evils of the war consigned to oblivion. He wanted to get back to a country, you know, that he remembered earlier on. But all three times he found awful corruption. In Hong Kong, he found corruption in the China service. When he went in the land office, he found corruption in the stealing of federal lands in Nebraska. He found corruption when he went into the law department, the Justice Department of Justice. In people stealing from the Indians. All three times, his own government destroyed him. The people he was working for. And I said to myself, you know, this is the fate of the whistleblower. He was as much a hero after the war as a whistleblower, as calling attention to corruption as he was during the war. And so this man, that's why I wrote the book, because I said, oh, no. He wasn't a bad man. He wasn't an ill-tempered, you know, he swore at people. No, he didn't. Everybody said he was a very gentle and the pink of chivalry is the way they put it. And by God, they've done this to him, and that's why I wasn't going to let that. I wrote a book. I didn't intend to write a book, but I wrote a book. He said,
I'm so glad you did.
He said that time would vindicate him, and my book was published 100 years from his death. 1916. It was published in 2016.
Golly, that's an amazing, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but you know what, Miss Valerie, one thing that sticks out, nothing has changed. There's nothing new under the sun. There's just same corruption nowadays, but probably worse as possible. And you know, Miss Valerie, just like John Singleton Mosby, the great ghost, just like he was punished by the people, by the evildoers, nowadays, the people that get punished are the people that go snooping and going in, especially into the federal government, the Federal Reserve, the banking system, the people that go in and investigate crimes, investigate corruptions, the investigators, the snoops, the good guys, they're the ones that put in prison. Yes,
well,
sir.
Of course. I don't know why anybody finds that unusual. I seem to recall that the fellow who was crucified was the fellow who was too good, you know, who was so good, who never did anything wrong or evil or bad. And what'd they do? They crucified him.
You know what? We had a congressman's wife. She won't come out anymore. I don't blame her. I wish I could remember the Texas congressman's name. I guess I'm getting old. But see, he was on the trail of Leonard. Janet Leonard, the lady in the – one of y'all people might have the memory. She was
right. The IRS?
Right,
that
correct.
Wonderful, that great. Now that they're on, do you realize that the bureaucrats in Washington, they have more guns than the Marines?
They sure do.
Did you know
they
that?
Sure do. That's right. I saw that. Well, see, they put him in jail. I wish I could remember his name. She used to come on here. We had her on the show. She would put out her website. They put him in jail. He suffered terribly. It was right there in the beginning of the so-called COVID thing. And they tried to kill him off. I wish I could remember. I'll try to remember, get his name for the next show. But see, he was hot on the trail of the federal government.
That's why he had
learning.
To go.
That's right.
That's so why he had to go. Yeah. I mean, that's what you do.
They put him on a trumped-up charge, you know. They turned it around on it and put his tail in jail. I mean, it's the same old song. Well, you know what, Miss Valerie? I hear the music. God bless you. We may have to get you back on to finish up this, or we'll get you on another character. So thank you so much, Mrs. Valerie, for coming on tonight. And I will also like to thank
Michael.
Thank
you for having me.
Hey, I'm picking up my new phone tomorrow, so I hope my new phone number, it will be the same phone number. But all of our people out there, I'll have my new phone tomorrow, hopefully. Thank you so much, Michael Tubbs. Thank you, Cam, for running the board flawlessly like you always do. Thank you, Blood River Radio audience. God bless you all. And tune in same place, same time next week. It'll be the 22nd of October, the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And we'll continue on with this course of white survival. Good night, everybody.